Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, the host of WNYC's New Tech City. I'm sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Thanks so much for having me. Listeners, I want to know, do you actually email with your doctor for clinical advice? If you do, how does it work? And has it changed your relationship with your doctor for better or worse? And doctors, do you email with your patients? Why or why not? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So there's a Consumer Reports poll that says that less than 1 out of 10 of us have contacted our doctors by email within the last year. Basically, almost none of us do, right? But our next guest thinks we should be able to, and that email communication could improve healthcare in general. Dr. Joseph Kavadar is the founder and director of the Center for Connected Health. He also teaches dermatology at Harvard Medical School. Hello, Dr. Kavadar.
Hi, great to be with you.
Thanks so much for being here. Let's start out. What is so controversial about doctors using email? Is it privacy and security, or is it the standard of care?
Well, we're at least my generation. I'm 57, so I'm probably the middle generation. But most of us were trained, you know, Manoush, to look someone in the eye and talk to them and the laying on of the hands. And it's a little bit foreign for a lot of docs to think about this new electronic world that we live in. So that's one factor. Patients, if you just flat out ask them, would you prefer to communicate electronically or be in front of your doc, most people would say they'd rather have the visit. You have to tease apart all of the things that are inconvenient about visiting your doctor, like finding a parking spot and waiting in the waiting room, and
yeah,
offer that. So I think it's in both cases, people need to reimagine the world we live in. It's healthcare delivery, I always say, is the only remaining service on the planet that you have to travel somewhere and sit in front of someone to get your service. We need to move into the 21st century.
Now, I have to say, I would have thought that emailing with a doctor would be great because I am a working mom, super busy. But yesterday, my email got hacked and somebody set up a fake email account in my name by another service. So then it made me start to think like, well, I don't know if I want my personal health data flying around the internet and somebody could claim to be me. What sort of safety mechanisms can be put in place? And are we willing to risk that?
Sure. Great question. And I'm glad you brought it up because I want to make one thing clear, that I'm using the term email here in the same way we say Kleenex and we mean tissue. I really mean an asynchronous communication between two people, and absolutely should be encrypted and protected. The two easiest ways to do that are, one is just to use encrypted email. I'm a believer that you should go where people's technology is. So I like to email with patients, but we always do it over encrypted email. The other is by using a patient portal that your health system sponsors, and mm-hmm. all those messages would be protected and encrypted. But I never meant to imply that we should use, if you will, naked email to communicate about health, because of your concern is quite valid.
Let's go to Ellen in Manhattan. Ellen, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Tell us about your experience.
Well, I just got off the phone with my doctor trying to sort out a mess that an email had created, and I take full responsibility, or at least most of the responsibility, for the fact that something that happened frustrated me, and with a nurse, actually, and I emailed my doctor, and I let my frustration out in such a way that she became quite alarmed and was concerned as to whether or not we could continue as patient or doctor.
When you say you let your frustration out, do you mean over the phone or in the email itself?
No, this is the email. I never would have spoken that way face-to-face. I'm just not, you know, the email, I find sometimes I have much more trouble controlling what I say over the email. And this has happened more than once with a doctor, and I'm concerned because I think that there needs to be more thoughtfulness put into the communication.
Ellen, thank you so much. Dr. Kvedar, Ellen brings up a really good point. I mean, she sounds so soft-spoken and lovely, but who knows what kind of animal Ellen is in her email. You know, the way people write emails, some people are very good at softening things. Other people have, you know, pardon the mix of metaphors, very bad bedside manner when they write their emails. What do you do about that?
Well, what I try to do is make sure that we're using our communications tools as they're in their best way. So if I really have the example I often give is that if I have a new diagnosis, particularly if it's a bad news diagnosis, I never do that by email. You need at least ideally in the office, but if you do it by phone, you can at least hear the person's tone of voice, communicate with them real time. You can react to what they're saying. On the other hand, if I'm reminding you that you just had your blood tests and they're all normal, that's pretty good for email. So the idea is low emotional impact things, routine things, algorithmic things are often more efficiently handled in this back and forth asynchronous way. Things that require, that have a high emotional import, whether they be an unhappy patient or a bad news diagnosis or some complicated therapeutic discussion, instinctively better to handle those with a real-time communication, maybe even ideally in person.
Mary's on the phone from Brooklyn. Mary, have you been emailing with your doctor?
Yes, I have on a regular basis for standard reactions to my lab tests. I have diabetes. It helps quite a lot that she has diabetes, too. She understands very well what is going on and small ways to correct what is going on and or perhaps, you know, changes in medication. Of course, you've been saying that it can have downsides in terms of misunderstandings, and I agree. I tend to, as a patient, put two and two together and get 200 instead of four, you know, and I go overboard and I get too brave and I try to handle it on my own and that kind of thing. And when that happens, I will find out next time I see her, which is every 3 months, I will find out that I've been wrong, that I was taking something way too seriously and overdoing the control. And she corrects that real easily. This is a person who, if she suspects that something has been misunderstood, would call me.
So and, she knows. Like you, it sounds like you and your doctor are in a rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really, really implicitly trust her.
I want to go to Lisette in South Plainfield, New Jersey. Lisette, is this right? Are you a physician yourself?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us about email and your relationship with it?
Well, a few months ago, I decided that I would like to start emailing my patients the day after I initially meet them. So we don't really have too much of a relationship built up, but I wanted to create more of a relationship with them. And I find that when you call people, you can leave a voicemail and they'll never call you back because we're all very busy. But I've had really great success with sending emails the next day because anybody can find 20 seconds to shoot back a reply. So it's helped me really create a nice relationship with my patients. And if they've thought of questions after I've dismissed them for the day, they can very much easily email me right back. Mm-hmm. And ask those questions, whether it be about their particular condition, scheduling, insurance, any of those questions.
And do you use an encrypted system? How do you deal with the privacy concerns?
We have the little blurb at the bottom that everything is private, and we do have firewalls, and my company takes care of that to make sure that we use a protected system so that we don't we minimize the threat as much as possible.
Thank you so much, Lisette, for the doctor's point of view. I mean, I have to say, Dr. Kvedar, it drives me bananas, the number of phone messages or voicemails that I have to trade. I have a thyroid condition that I have to get tested every 6 months. And just to get the number of what my levels were, it's so annoying. Why is there resistance from doctors when it comes to being available by email? Are they worried about being sued? Are they worried they're not going to be paid for the hours that they spend on email?
Probably some of all of that. Remember, Manush, it's a new channel, and people, if I can remember, I think you probably were too young to remember, but there was a time when we got this new thing called voicemail, and we were all kind of worried that
was this new thing. Oh, I remember, my friend. I remember.
And then all of a sudden, email came, and something funny happened that the number of voicemails in your business life, anyway, kind of went down because you now had email. And so we're in that tender stage with healthcare delivery where people are busy. I'm sure you've heard about the primary care crisis and what have you, and there's a lot of new documentation. There's all kinds of new things going on with the Accountable Care Act and meaningful use and electronic records. And this is, for some people, just one more scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we try to do in our system and is to remind them of that phenomenon, which is how much, as you don't like a voicemail tag, I'm sure they don't either. So we try to remind them, and your previous caller nailed it, which is this is so much more efficient for the right kind of communication.
We've got Kate on the line. She's in Hudson Valley, New York. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Tell us what you think about this. Is this right? You work in a...
Well, I think the elephant in the room here is, because there's lots of pluses and minuses about this, but I think the real elephant in the room here is who's going to pay for a doctor's time, not just a PA or an employee of a hospital, but an independently practicing doctor who is under so much stress from insurance company reimbursements, which are getting fewer and lower,
mm-hmm.
and the only chance that they have of getting a reimbursement is a face-to-face visit. They won't pay for house calls, even if they're needed. They won't pay for emails. I wonder if Dr. knows what the state of the art is regarding that.
Show me the money.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a great. I'm glad it came up because we have to deal with the economics. I'd say a few things on that. The first is that there are now reimbursement codes for electronic communication with patients, and a number of insurance carriers will pay for it. It does usually require that the doctor adopt an electronic system to do it that the health plan endorses. So there's it's not frictionless, but there are codes to do this, and a lot of plans are now reimbursing for it. Again, plain old email, as we said, not going to fly for all kinds of reasons, this being one of them, that I can't document that I sent an email. It has to be in a system that documents the activity so that if someone ever audits me, I can point to it. So there's that. The second is the rising tide of new payment models, which is really quite liberating and exciting. And that just has to do with this idea that we call pay for value, that as your caller mentioned, we've been paid for so many years now by the units of service we provide. We're entering an era where healthcare providers are now paid and contractually to take care of a population based on the outcomes they achieve. And that opens the door for all kind of virtual care models. And people like us at our system in Boston, Partners Healthcare, are now reimbursing doctors to do these virtual visits ourselves because we know that that's going to save us time, energy, and money in our bottom line under these new payment models. The last thing I'll say is, I'll use an analogy. I grew up in Barrie, Vermont, nice little town, and there were two hardware stores, True Value and Aubuchon's. And if Aubuchon's didn't have an item, they'd send you down the street to True Value. We are in a service industry, and we have to be accessible to our patients, and that's something we just have to get into the 21st century and just do it.
Kate.
I think also it's probably an appropriate time to mention that there is another model of care which is increasingly becoming popular, and that is concierge medicine. Those patients never have to complain about inaccessibility to their physician.
So
that's right. That is a different model. Yeah.
Kate, thanks so much for calling.
Surely. Thank you for taking my call.
Gail is on the line from Harlem. And, Gail, you have a story for us.
Well, my daughter wasn't feeling well, so I had my doctor's cell, and I texted her my daughter's symptoms, and she texted me back what we should take and what I should do, and we did it, and I texted her back the next day, and she said, well, okay, if it doesn't get better, come in. And, you know, that took each of us, the doctor and me, like seconds, and if I had tried to call the office, I never would have gotten through. You know, it's one of those clinics. And if we had gone in, we would have gone in without an appointment and been waiting hours. And so it just was so efficient. And I'm sure there's no way to make this turn this into a system that remains efficient.
Well, that's a good question, Gail. Thank you so much. And Dr. Kavadar, you know, is what Gail described, this idea of, you know, you text your doctor your symptoms and off you go. You know, you're also a professor. What are the expectations of your students as to how they will be communicating with their patients in the future?
Well, I joke about this sometimes. This is the generation that are now coming into their residencies are the generation of students that grew up breaking up with their boyfriends and girlfriends by text. So we can probably
What's a urinary tract infection by text, huh?
Yeah, we can probably expect many more examples like your caller so eloquently described, and the efficiencies and the satisfaction. And I'll say it again, the more we get into these new models of reimbursement where we're held accountable for the quality of care we provide, all kinds of new customer service metrics creep in, like affinity and patient-reported outcomes. And these types of communication tools that we're talking about are all quite helpful in that context. So it's only a bright future for this stuff.
Sarah's on the line from Brooklyn. Hello, Sarah.
I wanted to say that when I speak with my doctor, I would like him or her to be totally attentive to me while I'm describing my symptoms. If they check their phone, I'm going to be really put off. And, I mean, there are ways that it could be done. I mean, they could take emails all day and then just have a certain time that the doctor gets back. Or if it's have someone screen the emails, and if it seems really urgent, the nurse or someone could come in while I'm talking to the doctor and say, "Doctor, you have a patient with an emergency when you have a chance." But for my doctor to be digitally interrupted while they're supposed to be listening to me, I would find really dreadful. Also, they're putting our most personal records in a cloud. Who came up with that word anyway? What is more permeable than a cloud? That's just so... I mean, I feel like, the digital world is slapping us in the face with that word.
Thank you, Sarah.
Those are my opinions.
Dr. Kavadar, the cloud, doctors being interrupted by their gadgets in the middle of seeing a patient. What do you advise to doctors in terms of managing all these things?
Yeah, so your caller had two or three scenarios, all of them viable. One is I take email at a certain time. I block an hour out to do my email. The other is that I have office workers screen things for me and bring them to my attention. Those are both viable. I don't think there's any viable option that says I'm sitting with you and then I'm looking at my smartphone and sitting and not paying attention to you. That is not a viable option.
So one last question, very quickly. You know, I feel like this is also a trend in that it used to be that people never questioned their physicians, but now doctors are getting rated online. Just to sum up, do they now have to treat their patients more like clients?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, as a professional, you like to think that you have a different relationship than a client relationship. I happen to personally be fond of the idea of customer service. I'm a very service-oriented person, so I'm not afraid of that idea. But there are a number of my colleagues who would really feel like we completely threw ourselves into the soup by calling ourselves customer relationship people.
Another time. We'll have to touch on that one. That's another conversation.
All right.
Dr. Joseph Kavadar is the founder and director of the Center for Connected Health. Dr. Kavadar, thank you so much for being here. That's it for today.
It was a real pleasure.
Thanks again. That's it for today. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. I'm sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Usually I'm the host of WNYC's New Tech City. Come on over to newtechcity.org. Spend some more time with me. We look at the big issues of the digital age. We laugh a lot because otherwise we would cry. Thank you so much for having me today, listeners. Enjoy the rest of your day.